The Tom Woods Show, episode 715.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, one of the first things you figure out when you become a libertarian is that all the U.S. presidents your teachers told you were great were terrible. Learn the true history of the U.S. presidents and their crimes against liberty in our new course on the presidents. Check it out at freehistorycourse.com. Hey, everybody, it's almost that time. Bob Murphy and I are hosting a cruise in October 2016. It's the Contra Cruise, named after our podcast, Contra Krugman, and we've got a lot of terrific things lined up. How could this not be the best time you've ever had? Check it out at contracruise.com. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm talking to Leah McHenry by popular demand. I've had quite a few requests to have her on the show, particularly from my supporting listeners over at supportinglisteners.com. She is an independent musician and also a libertarian. In fact, I think I first saw her over on Anarchast, which is the program that Jeff Berwick hosts. So I thought I'd have her come on and talk about her story. I mean, it's great. It's an interesting thing about how somebody in the internet age is able to build a career, is able to create a following out of nothing, really out of nothing, starting at ground zero and building from there thanks to the different ways you can get your message out, and in this case, get your music out through the internet. So it's an interesting story. And, you know, I love entrepreneurial stories like this, and we haven't told one in a while, so I thought I would talk to Leah McHenry. Leah, welcome to the show.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for having me.
The other day, I was in the car. We were listening to some of your music. And by we, I mean my 13-year-old daughter and I. And, you know, there are some great independent musicians out there that I've gotten to know and really like, and there are other independent musicians where you say to yourself, I think I see why this person is an independent musician. We listened to your music and we loved it. We looked at each other and said, okay, she's good. So
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't want to have to come on here and make things up. You know, I like to be able to tell people, honestly, I really enjoyed what you're doing. Now and I noticed that with quite a few of the songs that we played, you know, you've had quite a few listens and views on YouTube. So you've managed to make a, you know, make a bit of a name for yourself out there. So there are a lot of different angles I want to take here. I want to take the angle of being an independent musician in the age of the internet. Also, you and I seem to have very compatible political views, so I certainly want to get to that in a little while. But tell me, first of all, let's give us some background. How long have you been in music, and how long have you been in music where you've been really using the internet as a tool to become better known?
Yeah, so I've been a songwriter since I was about a teenager. I've done a lot of songwriting, but it's funny, I didn't really pursue music as a more serious hobby, which is kind of what I still consider it, until after I was married and had kids. And so it's funny because I feel like my whole career has been completely backwards compared to the typical progression of what musicians would normally do. Normally they, you know, tour while they're young and see the world and do all that. And then later on, they'll settle down with family life. Well, I've done it completely backwards. And so I just think, you know, that even I still pinch myself the fact that anything has even come of it. Like, it's amazing to me.
Well, tell us a little bit something about what your music is like. Assume you're talking to people who are unfamiliar with you. How would you describe it?
So my fans coined the term the metal Enya. And so I think that really summarizes the genre nicely, where it's like Lord of the Rings fantasy inspired stuff combined with some of the elements of rock and heavy metal, and creates kind of an ethereal metal experience.
Now, when you say metal, though, you say there are some aspects of metal, you don't mean what a lot of people often associate with metal, which is the growling voice.
Right. So, yeah, these days, so within any genre, you have a lot of subgenres and even subgenres below that. And so metal, just like you would say country music, it can take on all different kinds of forms. So when I say metal, I'm just talking mostly about adding the guitar and drum aspect of it. And my vocals are completely the opposite of what you would find in a lot of heavy metal, which is, you know, my vocals are very ethereal, very feminine, very angelic style. And so I'm combining that world with some of those aspects of heavy metal. So just my favorite parts, I'm putting them together.
So how much music have you produced that you've released to the public?
I've done 2 full-length albums, and I've done 1 EP and a few singles.
Okay, and have you just finished something? Are you working on something now? What stage are you at?
I'm in the writing stages of possibly my next album. I definitely plan on continuing what I've been doing. But because I have such a busy family life, I don't know if you knew I have 5 kids, all under the ages of 10. So because of that, I chip away at things. And so because we've got lots of other stuff, lots of life happening. So, you know, I work on it as I can, and my fans are very understanding and they love it.
Well, I have 5 children as well, ages 13 and under, and we had 3 under 3 at one point, and all 3 of them were in diapers at the same time. So,
I've been there.
I think we can share a lot of stories in that regard. All right, so that again makes you unique. I mean, you already said that you followed the career a bit in reverse, compared to how most musicians would. So, and you have a fan base that understands. You have 5 children. Now, typically, when you record an album, I mean, you've got to reserve a studio somewhere, and you've got to just go out there and bang it out as quickly as possible because you're being charged per hour to use the studio. Like, isn't that right? How do you make all that work? I mean, in other words, you can't just sneak away for an hour here and there.
Yeah, well, actually, I do a lot of it at home. And in fact, my last album was a kind of an international collaboration. I had players in Europe, and my mixer was in Germany, and I had a player in Holland, and just people all over. And so a lot of the writing we did at home, a lot of the pre-production. And then by the time you go into the studio, actually the drums were recorded in Germany, so I wasn't even there. And I personally went into a local studio here to record all my vocals. And for that, you know, it was like three or four days of just, actually, and I was like 7 or 8 months pregnant with my 5th baby when I did that too. So at that point, my husband took over the household. He's awesome with our kids. So just love him. And so I had his support that way. So I could just go in and really do my best job in the studio.
So now here's the big question. Being an independent musician in this day and age, I can think of ways in which that, you know, today is a great time to be an independent musician, because even if you get locked out by big labels, big deal. I mean, you have your own channels to reach people. But at the same time, on the other hand, the trouble with that is the supply has multiplied precisely because everybody knows they have YouTube and they have other ways of delivering their material. So the competition is more intense. So is it a mixed bag, the internet, or is it just overwhelmingly positive?
I am a huge fan of the internet for musicians right now. You know, in this age where everybody says the music business is dead and all of that, I couldn't disagree more. I really believe that, yes, there is more competition, but all that does is really help the cream will always rise to the top. And so, and there's a couple of things with that, though. It doesn't always just rise to the top just because it's good, you know, and it's like any market, any business out there, you know, you have to have a great product. So what it does is encourage people to get better at what they do, because they know, they've heard there's 100,000 other musicians out there all trying to do the same thing. They're all, you know, there's a bunch of wannabes. So you have to have a better product, better quality, and you've got to actually start digging down into a niche. And just like a lot of other businesses do, you have to, you know, hone in on a very specific target audience. And that's what I've done. And so I'm actually a businesswoman too. And I think you have to be, if you're going to be successful in the internet age as a musician, you have to be an entrepreneur as well. So that has really, really helped me, is being able to understand that, know that it's got to be good. In fact, it has to be the best that I can possibly make it. And I have to know my audience, and I have to have a niche.
All right, I want to go back to when you were releasing your very first album. At that time, did you already have a following, maybe from, I don't know, maybe more informal music that you had done? Or were you really starting at ground zero when you released that first album?
It was totally ground zero. I mean, I put my music up on YouTube and hoped for the best. You know, that was my marketing strategy.
That was just what I was going to ask you. So then what? Then what happened?
So here's what happened. Nothing. Nothing really happened because it was the myth of if you build it, they will come. And this is where I see so many other musicians doing this, that, hey, if I have amazing music, something miraculous is going to happen. I'm going to go viral. Someone's going to stumble across my music. I'm just going to get discovered. And that is not true. It does happen to a very small percentage of musicians out there. But I take a far more strategic approach. And now, had I started back then, I would have done things differently. Well, first of all, you know, you do need some music to work with. Like, you've got to, if you want to market your music in the internet age, you do need some good quality music to, you know, put out there to the world. But then I really started digging into my niche. That I just can't stress how important that was for me, was discovering that. Now, it took me a long process, but now that I've done it, you know, my niche can sometimes vary a little bit. I actually call it my micro niche because I'm going even deeper, and it can vary from project to project. But that was the second thing that really propelled me, was I started to know exactly the market that my music would best serve. And so I started looking at other bands that were similar to me. What do those demographics of people look like? What are they reading? What websites are they hanging out at? What is the subculture associated with that? And I mean, I started studying marketing, really. And it just, it propelled the little success that I've had. And to the point now where I make a full-time living doing this. So, I mean, it really, really, I just want to encourage musicians out there listening to this that, like, don't abandon the business side. You know, art and business work very well together, and they don't have to be conflicting.
Was there a particular moment, a particular thing you did that suddenly just the floodgates opened and you said, okay, this was the trick, or this was the thing that really, really opened the doors for me? Like, what was it that was different from what you'd been doing before of just putting music out there and crossing your fingers?
There was definitely some layers to that, because I started studying a lot. I started studying a lot of business. I started studying a lot of marketing and things that were working in internet marketing. And I started translating that into what I was doing with music. And so one of the things I'd say has been absolutely life-changing for me was not putting music up on YouTube. It wasn't building Facebook and all these social media platforms. In fact, I probably don't do enough of that. But what was really a turning point for me was building my email list. I mean, you would think, how boring is that? But I'm telling you, just like a lot of other businesses out there will tell you, that the size of their email list directly correlates to how much money they'll make. And it's still true. Email isn't going anywhere. And so the fact of the matter is that anything could happen to one of these social platforms, and you don't own those platforms. You don't own your page on YouTube. You don't own your page on Facebook. You could get hacked. They can do anything. A private website is a private business, and you could get shut down. You could get hacked. So the bottom line is, the only thing you really have is your email list. That's the only thing you can directly control, and they can't take that away from you. And so now I've really shifted my focus to doing that one thing. And there's a number of ways I do it, but that has really transformed everything. Because when I went to go do my last crowdfunding campaign, I raised over $27,000 with just basically my email list and some social media. That was it.
I was going to ask you that, because on my smartphone here, I knew I had seen that. And yeah, I just called it up. You did an Indiegogo campaign that was, as you say, more than funded. It went over the amount that you were even asking for. And I was curious to know how you did that. I'm so glad you said that thing about the email list, because I wonder if my listeners' eyes glaze over when I talk about stuff like this from time to time. That really is the key. Is building that, learning how to build a list, first of all, because a lot of people don't want to give you their email addresses. You got to give them a reason to do that. And then once you have that list, you have to know what to do with it. It's not enough just to have a bunch of names. Now what do you do? So let me ask you, how do you build a list? You don't just put a little form on your website that says, join my newsletter for updates. Do you give them a free song, or what do they get?
Yeah, so there's a number of ways you can do it. But basically, what I teach, and I don't know if you knew this, but I teach other musicians to do what I'm doing right now. And there's a few ways, and one is everything you do on social media should all be driving people to your email. That should be the one call to action that you always have. And that can change from time to time, but that's really the one action I'm encouraging right now is joining the email list. And that's where you really want to build relationship. People are tired of being spammed in their inbox. What they want is an experience. And so my job as a musician is to give them that experience. And part of this is knowing my niche, because I know that my music is all about escapism. And that when they listen to my songs, when they look at the photos and all that, they're looking for a certain kind of experience. And that is going to vary from genre to genre. But generally, people listen to music to feel better and to stop thinking about their stressful day. And so I have to create that kind of relationship through email. I tell them about myself. I tell them my life. I'm open and honest about who I am. They know I have kids, and I used to shy away from that stuff before. I thought, well, that's not very cool. And now I realize, you know, that very thing that kind of made me feel shy is the one thing I really need to incorporate into who I am, because in this internet environment, people just want transparency. They want to know who you really are. They want you to be authentic. And so I incorporate that into my email strategy, into my social media. But building relationship and community and actually culture is really what has given me any success at all.
Now, this crowdfunding, was that for your second album?
It was for my latest album. So yeah, my second full length. That's right.
All right. So by that point, you had built up a following and you thought to yourself, I've seen a lot of people use crowdfunding. And by the way, we've all seen very worthy projects fail to meet the goal. And we've seen completely frivolous projects way more than meet the goal. So you, no matter how good you feel about what you're doing, you have to enter that with a little bit of hesitation. Mm-hmm. So as you when you clicked to start that thing going, did you have any expectation in your mind or fear or hope, or what were you thinking?
That one campaign was a total act of faith on my part, and had, you know, I've learned so much since then. And I'll tell you something that I just actually am doing right now, because I'm thinking of doing another one and what I've learned about it. But with that campaign, oh yeah, I was terrified and it was a huge risk. And I also set it to the setting where I have to raise all of the funds or I get nothing. So I was really going out on a limb there. But, you know, I was communicating with the fans, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And I actually asked them, what do you think? What would you like? What are your ideas? Do you think this is a good idea? And I get feedback first. It's like, you know, running a test market before you actually go create the product that nobody actually wants. And I think that's a huge important part of what musicians should be doing.
You know, it's funny, before we went on, I left out another musician I've had on. I've had on a guy named Steve Hogarth from a British band named Marillion. And they basically, in the 1990s, when the internet was, you know, nothing compared to what it is now, they pioneered the idea of crowdsourcing. They basically said, they said to their fan club, would you be interested in basically helping us fund our new album? And we'll put your name in the sleeve and you'll get it before anybody else. But you have to buy the album before we even produce it. If you're interested in that, send an email to yes@marillion.com. And if you're not, send one to no@marillion.com. And that way they didn't even have to read the emails. They just had to count them. And they got so many that they went ahead and did it. And the response was terrific. And these are things that, you know, now it seems obvious, but then they were just giving that a try, and it just worked astonishingly well. And that was also a case where they were a European band. They couldn't seem to make American tours work. So their American fans used crowdfunding to get them over to the U.S. And they said, here's the money to get you here. We'll still buy tickets once you get here. So if you are producing a good product and you build up that fan base and you know how to promote yourself, those three things, it seems to me that you know, the internet is a tremendous tool, and when you have these wonderful successes, it's one of these moments when you can just be thrilled to be alive at a time like this.
Absolutely. If it wasn't for the internet, nobody would know who I am. I'd still be writing songs in my basement, and that would be the end of it. So, I mean, who would have thought that a homeschool of kids would be, you know, making a living from her music, and I don't leave my house. How is that? That would never have been possible even 15 years ago.
Yeah, totally not possible. Now, you describe yourself as a libertarian?
Yes.
All right. So tell me a little bit about that. And of course, to me, I personally see a link between libertarianism and people who become entrepreneurs and who work for themselves and who carve out some kind of a space for themselves, and they figure out how to do it and they don't take anything from anybody. I see that there's a kind of commonality between those two things. In other words, the way you're living your life and your views about the way the world should be are not a million miles removed from each other.
No, I totally agree. I see that. And I think there's a lot of musicians out there who maybe they don't know they are kind of libertarian, but they're living, you know, they're living the lifestyle and they're making choices that kind of are.
So does that have any bearing in your music, or is your music just sealed off from your political views?
Oh, it definitely affects my music and lyrics and all of that. I think I believe that whoever you are, whatever your beliefs are, I do think that comes through your art. It's pretty hard to separate the person from the art that manifests from the person. I think that's pretty difficult to do. So yeah, you'll notice some libertarian themes in some of my lyrics. You'll notice my faith in my lyrics. I think all of that comes through the art.
What are some of the things that you write about?
A lot of times, you know, I'm just going to a different place. You know, I'm escaping from diaper land in my world. And so I'll go to my imagination. I'll get inspired. I'll do research on places or historical events. And I kind of use that as a springboard for lyrics. And so, yeah, I'll write about fantasy themes. On my last album, there was a couple of songs that were inspired by the Narnia series that I was reading my book, reading to my kids at the time. We were going through that series. So just some of the visual pictures that I get will inspire a whole song. But it's not necessarily directly about the books or directly about a character, but it just inspires me beyond my normal, you know, homework and washing dishes type of life.
Do you ever do live performances?
Very rarely these days, and there will come a day when I actually tackle that and I'll really be focused on it. But, you know, I have to have priorities. And so right now my family and young kids priority. So I've decided to purposefully just be a recording artist at this time. And I will embrace that one day these days.
All right. Well, I think everybody acknowledges and respects that. It makes sense in your situation. Tell me about, let's say I'm an independent musician and I'm just doing it all wrong. I'm putting my music up on YouTube and I'm disappointed that I have only 10 views. What are two pieces of advice you would give me? What are two, and not too abstract, specific action steps that I can take?
I think, you know, assuming that you're talented and assuming that you've got a good product, you need a marketing strategy. You need a plan. And like the very first thing I tell my students is they do need to be focused on discovering what their micro niche is, because until you can figure that out, it's going to be really hard to do any kind of promotion to the right kind of people. As I said, you can have a great product. You have an amazingly talented, music, but if you don't know your audience, you're not going to be able to connect those two things. So you could put your music up on YouTube, but there's a thing on YouTube called tags, right? Where you can tag your video with certain keywords. So one of the things that I do, and this is a tip that I teach, is you've got to know the keywords that your fans are actually searching for up in the YouTube bar, search bar, right? Because YouTube is actually the second biggest search engine to Google. So people are looking for things actively every single day. So you need to know, what are they searching for that will rank my video at the top? And so you've got to know that. And until you know your micro niche of what they're actually searching for in a very specific terms, your music is just going to get buried. So that's a really big one to know. And the second one is direct all traffic to your email. You've got to start building that email list, building relationships with people. And it doesn't, I mean, there's all kinds of nuances in these things, but that's as simple and basic as it gets. It's not hard to do, but it does take, you know, time and effort to get all those things in place. And of course, experimenting a little bit. So, you know, YouTube ranking and knowing how to tag, knowing your micro niche and building your email list.
Now, if somebody is brand new to your music, is there something you'd want them to hear first that you think is the best or most accessible to a newbie? Where do you direct people who are listening to you for the first time?
Actually, all my music is up for free streaming on leahmchenry.com. And so they can browse all my albums and singles there. And I have options to purchase, options to donate, different amounts. And so, yeah, I'm kind of experimenting with that, but it's all there. And you can definitely browse through it.
All right. Well, how about this? Is there a particular, have you noticed there's a fan favorite among your songs?
I know that they like one of my latest singles. Okay. So if I had to choose from my last album, there's a song called This Present Darkness, and there's a lyric video for that one. And that's on leahmchenry.com. This Present Darkness, it's from the album Kings and Queens. I'd say from my EP Otherworld, which is really popular in Europe, the song The Northern Edge is one of the most popular songs on that EP. And then from Of Earth and Angels, my first debut album, Old World is one of the most popular songs on that one.
So the website is Leah McHenry. I want to make sure people know that that's LEAHMCHENRY.com. Of course, I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/715, this being episode number 715. Let's see. How else? Now, when you said homeschooling, do you mean you yourself were homeschooled, or your own children are homeschooled, or both?
We homeschool our 5 kids.
So that is, you must be extremely busy.
I am. That's why I don't tour.
Yeah, exactly. I was just wondering if maybe in the local area or whatever you did that from time to time. But so you homeschool them, and you're in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know, I don't know anything about Canada and homeschooling, but my instincts would be that it's a little tougher. There would be more hoops to jump through in Canada than in the U.S., or am I wrong about that?
Actually, it's quite shocking. Here in B.C., we have some of the most, you know, open homeschool laws that exist. Like, we actually have a ton of freedom. So basically, all we have to do is register with a school here, just saying, acknowledging the fact that, and it can be any school, it can be a private school. You can just acknowledge that, yes, we are educating our kids, and that's it. Total hands off. And we have complete 100% and have to report the number of days of attendance or anything like that. So it's actually incredibly, and I hope it stays this way, incredibly free. And there are government programs as well that support distance learning. But, you know, I'm shocked at how much freedom we actually have here in BC. Now, the other provinces, they vary a little bit. And there was some attempts in Alberta to really start cracking down and regulating homeschool stuff. But there was enough homeschoolers that rallied against that, that it didn't work. So we're thankful for that.
Well, that's great. Now, I know this is sort of a personal question, but I can't help asking. In deciding to homeschool your kids, what were the main one or two motivating factors?
I'd say one of the main reasons was the realization, and this happened actually while my firstborn was still a baby. We just happened to hear some sermons and lectures on this that really opened our eyes to the fact that education is actually a parental responsibility. It's not the role of the government to educate. And that just that opened our eyes when we realized that. I mean, it completely affected every decision we made from there on out. So learning what proper roles are and why, and what is the standard for that and who says, and pros and cons of all of that, that informed our choices from there on. So from the time, you know, our son was a baby, we considered, hey, we're homeschoolers.
Well, very interesting. And it is funny how sometimes you can just get a raw insight like that and realize, hey, wait a minute, if I really absorb and, you know, internalize this insight, it really is going to affect the way I have to live my life. And that includes the way my own children are educated. Well, I'm thrilled for your success, and I think you have such a unique story, and you're right that letting people know who you actually are is actually something they want, and it's unique. It's not some phony baloney manufactured product, but it's a real person. So it sounds to me like you're going about it exactly in the right way, and I have no advice to give you because you already know what to do. So all I can say is thanks for your time and best of luck, and I'm going to try to drive you some traffic over at leahmchenry.com.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm also would just love to add too that if there's other musicians out there who are wanting to do what I've done, I mean, I've been very strategic in this whole process and building a fan base to where my husband was able to quit his construction job. And we're doing this together. My music business, that's what we do now. And so now we're both working from home and we're with our kids all the time. It's amazing. And I never thought that would be possible in the internet age, but it is. So if anybody is wanting to be encouraged, I do have some free trainings over on our website at savvymusicianacademy.com. And I also have a free webinar where I dig into the specific 5 ways that I actually have created multiple streams of income for music. And that is at explodeyourfanbase.com.
All right. We're going to put all those links up at tomwoods.com/715. So check those out there and pay Leah a visit. And Leah, thanks again for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, everybody, before I let you go, a few things. A debate that I wanted to have on the show looks like it has fallen through. I wanted to do a debate with Ed Stringham. Ed has been on the show a couple of times, and he just had an article in the Wall Street Journal on the subject of the police and is there really a war on the police and what do the numbers really show. I wanted to have him come on and debate Heather McDonald of the Manhattan Institute, who has a new book out called The War on Cops, and I thought that would make for an interesting discussion. Because he isn't entirely convinced of her thesis, and I thought that'd be a good back and forth. And unfortunately, her people have refused to do it. They were not opposed to having her be a guest on the show, but I thought it'd be much more interesting to have her talk to Ed. And of course, you guys know I'm a fair debate moderator. There would have been no problem there. But her side has refused to do it. So that's where the fault lies. Unfortunately, I wanted to have that debate. Looks like that's not going to happen. However, I am cooking up a debate so juicy that should be taking place sometime in the next few weeks that it is going to make you forget for all time the failed debate about the police. Okay? It is so juicy. I won't even have to tell you this is the debate I was talking about. You'll know, my friends. Oh, you will know. All right. A couple other things. There's another one-day sale. They don't usually put these back-to-back like this. I don't know why. Maybe people didn't respond to their first one. I don't know. But Bluehost, that hosting company, web hosting company that I promote, is having a one-day sale. Nobody else knows about it except me and the few other affiliates they have. So I'm giving you advance notice. This is, again, like insider trading. That's what you get when you listen to the show. It is this Wednesday, August 17th, 2016. And it'll be $2.95 a month for web hosting. That's just ridiculous. So if you're thinking of starting a website, don't start it till Wednesday. You know, hold your fire and then grab it on Wednesday because that is a fantastic deal. And of course, if you do it through my link, you get all my goodies, video tutorials, plus publicity on the show and a backlink on my site. This is worth its weight in gold. So check that all out, including the link, everything you need to get this super deal at tomwoods.com/publicity. And I will mention that there is a show listener who has just started his own website. It's humblehands.co, not .com, humblehands.co. It is a place where he's consolidating all his various family businesses. And as he said in his email to me, he said, "We started farming about 3 years ago here in Dresden, Ohio, when we saw how much government regulation was making our food unhealthy. We love raising all-natural, chem-free pastured pigs and chickens for our community. We homeschool and sell barefoot books to support the kids' curriculum. We use and sell essential oils to support the health of our family. And they also help women with postpartum depression." So all kinds of different things under one umbrella, and that umbrella is humblehands.co, and I will be linking to that as the listener website mentioned over at tomwoods.com/715. So again, if you'd like this kind of shout-out for a site you have not yet started yet, check out tomwoods.com/publicity to get all the details of how to do that. All right, that's it for today. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.